play out in what you guys are training and equipping your chaplains to see and understand and teach and use?
During those next 3 years, they became the Christian community for us. They discipled us, they loved on us, and they actually started to help us see that we had gifts for ministry. And it, part of it is the reality of the countries that we personally are dealing with. So in my case, like in Burundi, there's no chaplain school. They don't get trained how to do military ministry.
What are a lot of these chaplains not coming with any of that training at all? Are they new to the idea? Is this kind of maybe innovative and groundbreaking? I mean, it seems like this should be standard practice, but it doesn't sound like that's the case. Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. Today on the show, I'm going to be talking with Brian Klegger. He is one of the VPs of Cadence International. Brian, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to this time.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about Cadence International? What's the origin story? How did you get started? Why do you exist? Those type of things.
Yeah, Cadence International. Our mission is sharing the gospel in our lives with military communities. And we're a ministry that's focused on militaries, coming alongside chaplains, rounding out their work. The majority of our ministries are working with U.S. military, but we also have some small slices that are working internationally and cross-culturally. That's part of what I do. And our organization got started, well, I mean, you can trace the origins actually all the way to World War II. There was a young soldier named Jesse Miller. He was stationed in the Philippines during World War II. And while he was at, I think it was Clark Army Airfield, there was an American family, the Brooks family, and they were missionaries, and they lived close to the American military base. And so he would go out there all the time, and they would do Bible studies at their house. He'd get a home-cooked meal. During his time with them, I think it was 108 Bible verses he memorized just by being with them and being in their Bible studies and their ministry to him and other soldiers. And then the Japanese attacked the Philippines, and he retreated with all the American military to the Bataan Peninsula. And for about 3 months, he was part of the resistance. And then eventually when the military surrendered, he then was part of the Bataan Death March, which was about a three and a half week ordeal for him, where honestly, the Japanese did not want to spare their bullets. So if an American fell down, fell out, was too sick, couldn't keep going, they would bayonet him just to save ammunition. And he somehow survived that. And his reward for doing that was several years in a Japanese POW camp. And he has incredible stories about what life there was like. But one of the things through that whole ordeal that he kept thinking to himself was, if I survive this, I want to do for soldiers what the Brooks family did for me. If I ever survive this, and if I have a home of my own, God, the house is yours to use for the military, for soldiers and their families. So sure enough, he survived, came back. I think he went to Bible college and got married, and he and his wife went overseas, and they just started doing exactly what the Brooks family did for them. And over time, a couple more soldiers came along and were inspired by it, wanted to be a part of it, felt the calling by God. So then there's a few more doing it, and in 1954, so this year is our 70th anniversary, these about five or six guys gathered together, prayed about it, really sensed God leading them to kind of formalize what they're doing. And so they created an organization called Overseas Christian Servicemen Centers, OCSC.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is over time, they realized they were serving not just overseas, and it wasn't just to servicemen, it was to women also. And so there needed to be a name change. And through that process, we got renamed Cadence International. So kind of like a marching cadence. And we like to say that one of our goals is to stay in step with the Spirit, just like in a marching cadence, you got to stay in step with one another. So that's kind of the background of Cadence. And so our whole ministry now is coming alongside military chaplains. We like to round out their work. We work really hard to help them understand that we are to be a blessing to their ministry. We're not in competition with them. And we do this, a lot of it's through hospitality houses. Those are, we do ministry out of our homes using gift of hospitality, high relationship. We have a student ministry component. We have a cadet ministry program, family ministry, and some international ministry as well. I think I got all of them there.
Interesting. So how has the, there was the name change in there, but how's the model shifted over the years of how you guys have done ministry? And what is this, maybe what does disciple look like, discipleship and disciple making look like within that?
Yeah, both those are great questions. I obviously wasn't there in the start of all this, but
right.
The stories I hear, you know, reading the accounts, reading the history, talking to those who knew the founders, our ministry style hasn't changed much. And we are high discipleship in our ministry approach. And we use hospitality and relationship as a primary avenue for doing ministry. So just give you an example. I was in the Army after I graduated college. I graduated college. 6 weeks later, I got married. And within several months, I was stationed. Me and my wife got stationed in Germany. So newly married, new to being in the military, and new to living overseas. And our second Sunday, when we're in chapel on this Army post in Germany, this couple, Paul and Stacy Cassidy, they walk up to us. They recognize we're new. They introduce themselves. We get to know them. And they run a Cadence hospitality house outside the base, and they invited us out for lunch. And during those next 3 years, they became the Christian community for us. They discipled us, they loved on us, and they actually started to help us see that we had gifts for ministry. My wife and I had no plans to go into ministry. My wife's an athletic trainer, kinesiology major. I was a criminal justice major, loved being in the Army. I was a tanker, did reconnaissance, was in a cab unit. I mean, we loved what we were doing, and then God led us and shifted our focus and basically called us out of the military to do ministry to the military, just from a different angle. And so I went to Denver Seminary. After that, we moved over to Germany, and we started a hospitality house at a U.S. Army installation called Grafenwehr. And basically, we opened up our home outside the Army post with the support of the chaplains. We're in service every Sunday, but like every Friday night, we'd do a dinner and Bible study in our home, and we do a potluck dinner. And so we would ask the parents to bring your kids fed, feed them at home, but then we have childcare for them. We have a children's ministry program for them upstairs. And the reason we would do adult only dinner is because when I was deployed to Iraq in 2003, 2004, my wife, our oldest son at the time, was 10 months old. And she said during that time, she just craved adult conversation. We were stationed in Colorado Springs, and she would go to the Chick-fil-A and buy coffee, just hoping that she could talk to people. And so the idea was, in our ministry, we wanted to have a setting where, you know, especially if husbands are deployed or spouses are deployed, the family can come, the spouse can have adult conversation without her kids at her feet, have dinner together. Then after dinner, we'd go downstairs and we'd have a worship service, time of worship, a time of teaching. I described it as halfway between a sermon and a Bible study. I mean, it was, we're going somewhere, but it's participatory. You know, I'm asking questions. They're providing the application to the principles we're teaching. Then we would have dessert. Some soldiers would stay till 11, 12 at night. So we had a bunk room. Some single soldiers would stay the whole weekend. And so that's kind of like how I like to view discipleship as multiple points of contact, life on life, and you've got multiple points of contact. So I see a soldier in chapel on Sunday. He comes to our dinner Bible study on Friday nights. He might stay the weekend. He might get to see my wife and I argue over something petty, but because he's staying there living with us over the weekend, he gets to see it. That's discipleship. I go to the gym with him. I work out with him, you know. So that's what discipleship looks like. And in Cadence, one of the beautiful things is we let each of our ministries, each of our missionaries tailor their ministry to their gifts. And so ours was very family oriented because we had young kids, but some are more singles oriented. Some might be more focused on retreats and conferences. So each one's a little bit different based on the gifts and the talents that God's given those missionaries.
Okay. So a lot of the work through these hospitality houses, and then A large percentage, it sounds like, is ministry to the U.S. military. What does it look like to do ministry to outside of the military and maybe other militaries?
That's a fun question, in part because I'll tell you the story, how it worked for me. Just as I said, like, we didn't have ambitions to go into ministry. Once we got the hospitality house running, that wasn't even our mindset. You know, we were just so focused on how we're doing this. We're young in ministry. And after a couple of years, God laid it on my wife, her name's Amy, her and I's heart to not do ministry just to the people that were coming, not just to the soldiers and the families, but also through them. And he reminded me of one of my seminary professors talked about using Acts 1:8 as a ministry model. Acts 1:8 says, "And you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, and you'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth." So kind of geographically, local, regional, global. And so we really started praying about what would that look like. And so we started doing things with soldiers and the families to help them do ministry to their neighbors, to their coworkers. We would do, we called it a worship and serve day. Like for 2 months leading up to the Saturday, we'd say, talk to your neighbors, talk to your coworkers, find out projects we can do. And then we're going to gather as a Christian community. And on that day, we'll come together. We're going to worship for a little bit, pray together. And then we would go out. Just, I mean, we would change oil on cars. My wife, this one mom, her husband was deployed and she had 5 or 6 kids. My wife just did laundry all day for her, just to help her get caught up on things. And so we helped them think about doing ministry to their neighbors, to their coworkers and all that. And so then we started saying, okay, well, that's Jerusalem. What's our Judea and Samaria? And we're on the east side of Germany, about an hour from the Czech Republic border. And God laid on our hearts to work with a church and an orphanage. And just through some Holy Spirit guided connections, connected us with a church and an orphanage in a town called Tachov, Czech Republic. And so now we start taking soldiers, their families, their kids, and we'd go over to this orphanage and people from the church would come and translate for us. And we would do vacation Bible study for this orphanage. We'd just go over for Easter. We'd play soccer with the kids. So now they're getting like cross-cultural ministry. And so that really got going. And then we started saying, okay, well, what's the ends of the earth? And just, again, it was a season of prayer. And my field leader, this guy named Brad Elgin at the time, called me up and I'd been praying about what it just kept, Africa just kept sticking in my mind when I'd pray. And he called me up one day and said, "Hey, I was wondering if you'd want to go to Africa with me." And I was like, "Have you been reading my prayer journal? Like, what's going on here?"
Yeah.
And he and a couple other guys were interested in figuring out how we might be able to do military ministry in Africa, but we didn't know where. So one of these guys, Duncan Sprague, had some ministry connections. We went down there. The short story is a little country called Burundi. In Eastern Africa, it's one of the poorest countries in the world, one of the most malnourished. They were in a genocide and civil war for 11 years, ending in 2005. And we have been able to partner down there with chaplains. We do chaplain training. We do training in trauma care. We do conferences. And after a while, we got connected then with a group of wounded soldiers. And now our primary ministry in Burundi is to these wounded soldier communities. And these are small little communities of these soldiers who, from 94 to 2005, they were fighting against each other. And now they're living in these communities together and they're dependent on each other because one's blind, one's in a wheelchair, and they're taking care of each other. And so we've partnered and created a ministry of local Burundians. They go into these communities several times a week, discipleship, providing care for these guys. We just bought a farm field and they and their wives are now going and raising crops and they have, so it's just one of those. So that's kind of the cross-cultural piece just from my personal story of, and like I said, that like no grand visions, like of like, this is what's going to happen when we get into ministry. We just kept kind of staying in step with the Spirit and we look back and honestly just kind of laugh and are amazed at what God does.
Yeah. Just keeping on that cross-cultural missions topic, you talk about the importance of military ministry and providing this ministry support to soldiers and chaplains in Ukraine. We talked about this offline. Is this something that you wanted to talk about? So what does that look like within that context?
Yeah. God has been very gracious to lay on the heart of me and a couple others. Another vice president within Cadence, his name's Paul Bradley. And so the two of us from within Cadence have a passion for helping soldiers understand trauma and the response to trauma. And over the years, the U.S. military's been doing a better job of destigmatizing trauma, and so much has been learned on it. And so Paul and I have taken our experiences personally and a lot of the things that we've learned. He's trained on it in Burma and in Southeast Asia. I've trained on it in Burundi. But then with the war in Ukraine, we got invited to come over and train pastors and chaplains. And so last October, we went and did that. And then flowing out of that, we got connected with another ministry partner over there called AAA Authority. And this is another former, a U.S. military guy. He was Marines and then Army. And now he moved his family to Kyiv when the war started because he sensed God calling him there. And so we partner with him and we go out and we partner with chaplains and we give them training. But then they also take us to their soldiers and we meet with their soldiers and we provide training for them. We liken it to, if you think about in the medical world, you have doctors at hospitals and then you have frontline medics. Well, in the trauma world, you have clinicians and psychiatrists and the medical professionals. And then you also now can have frontline trauma medics, so to speak. But we're not training just like one guy to be a trauma medic. What we're going in is we're training frontline soldiers of some things that they can do in the midst of the trauma that they are going through that will lessen the potential for a strong injury and even it becoming a disorder. And so we go in, we meet with them, we share with them, we give them some practical tools, we hear their stories, and we're leaning into their lives while they're in the midst of, I mean, we hear about some really evil, horrendous things that they're going through. And so to lean in and to be present is what we're doing.
Yeah, that's that idea of therapeutic application within a ministry context, regardless of whether or not it's military ministry or otherwise. A lot of ministries that we talk to are going into some really hard places and they're seeing the effects of evil inside and outside of war torn countries. That this trauma care and trauma informed care is becoming more and more of a important piece to ministry to step into need in that way. Are a lot of these chaplains not coming with any of that training at all? Are they new to the idea? Is it is this kind of maybe innovative and groundbreaking? I mean, it seems like this should be standard practice, but it doesn't sound like that's the case.
Yeah, and part of it is the reality of the countries that we personally are dealing with. So in my case, like in Burundi, there's no chaplain school. They don't get trained how to do military ministry. And so they go from being a pastor and they go down, they apply to join the army and to be a chaplain. And now they're given a uniform, given a little bit of training in military protocol. And now you're a chaplain. And even in those countries, you know, the ability for higher level, you know, training and education seminaries is quite limited. And then in Ukraine, the interesting thing is they haven't had formalized military chaplains until just a couple of years ago. They had volunteer chaplains, I think going back about 10 years, but they just formalized their chaplains program within this last war. And so a lot of their chaplains are brand new. And again, have not been trained in military skills, in trauma related things. They've been pastors. Maybe they're doing something else and just sense the calling of God. We got linked up with a guy named Chaplain Alex. He's a volunteer chaplain in the Ukrainian military, wears a uniform, gets paid nothing by the military. I said, well, how do you make money to pay bills and buy groceries? And he goes, God just keeps providing. I said, well, does your wife have a job? He goes, no, she's raising our son right now. I said, so you just rely on, he goes, sometimes the church gives us money. Sometimes other organizations give me money. And he goes, God just keeps providing for me. And so his training, his experience is very limited, but he's stepping out in faith and he's loving on these guys And because he's willing to go to hard places and be present with them, they respect him.
Hmm. Yeah. What does it look like for within your context, the military ministry, to adapt to some of these unique challenges faced by soldiers in these conflict zones and the chaplains in these conflict zones?
Yeah. The adapt word is really good. We have to go into our, especially, so a week ago, I was in Ukraine and I was out east. Okay. And we had lined up 15 different blocks of training over a 7-week period when we'd be out east. And I think 3 of those planned training sessions occurred. So now there's all this time that's opened up. And so we're adapting to what's going on. But just based on the fact that we're there and we're present gives us an opportunity. We're praying. We're trusting the Holy Spirit. We're like, as an American, I really like to have the plan. As a military guy, I love it to be structured. We'll show up at this time. We'll do this train for this long. Here's our objectives. It doesn't happen like that. And so you're over there and you're right. Saying, okay, we thought this was going to happen. And the whole proverb of man makes his plans, but the Lord directs his steps. We are literally living that hour by hour. And even the meetings that did take place and we thought it was going to be happening this way, it happens a total different way. And Chaplain Alex, who I mentioned, this Ukrainian chaplain, he just walked in one morning. We didn't know what we were going to be doing for the next 3 or 4 days. And so there's 4 of us on this team. We're staying at this church. We're downstairs. We're just praying, having a Bible study, doing a little devotional. And Chaplain Alex walks in, sits down and says, can I just ask what you guys are doing here? And in real broken English. And we explained to him. He's like, well, I have soldiers. I'll take you to them. And we're like, all right, let's go. And so Chaplain Alex, you know, took us to his soldiers. We got to train him in the trauma principles. He got to hear it a couple times. So then now he's able to actually go and help these soldiers put it into practice, but also train them what to be doing. So I guess the adapt thing's real important. I have a philosophy of a funnel is just how I've come to think about it. And in all of us as followers of Jesus, we're called to certain things as followers of Jesus. You know, we're all called to forgive, to share the gospel, to love others, to show mercy. That's a calling on all of us. And then out of all Christians, you know, there are some that are called to vocational ministry. So it gets a little bit more smaller group. And out of those who are willing to do vocational ministry, some are willing to do it cross-culturally. And I don't say that as like that's a higher calling or anything. Like people who are doing hospital ministry, hospice ministry, inner city ministry, those, that's the funnel that they're into. You know, like only a certain amount of people are called and willing to go do that. And so in our case, you know, being willing to go cross-cultural and do ministry, being willing to do ministry to the military, and also being willing to do ministry in unsafe settings, I think just means the funnel gets smaller and smaller. And so for Christian leaders, as they find themselves in whatever their lane of ministry is, as they find themselves in a narrower and narrower piece of the funnel, I think the level of stewardship goes up and up. And so the fact that I'm willing to go to Eastern Ukraine and minister to soldiers on the front line, I take that calling incredibly, I hold it incredibly with high regard. You know, I don't take it lightly.
Right. Now back to the trauma care and the stuff that you guys are teaching to help these chaplains deal with trauma real time so that post the conflict, post incident, they might be able to avoid some type of long-term effects or disease or anything like that. What does some of that training look like? What are you guys teaching that is helping people who are experiencing trauma get to the end of that experience and not have the effects be so detrimental?
Yeah. The cool thing is what a lot of medical research and science is showing is what happens in our brain during traumatic events. And it's so easy to look at it and say, yeah, that's how God created us. That's how God designed us. Mm-hmm. And so in a traumatic event, the way that our brains process things, the parts of the brain that are active in the traumatic event, it's that whole fight, flight, freeze thing. A different part of our brain is taking control at that moment. It's the amygdala. It's the part of our brain that like controls your heartbeat. We can't make our heartbeat stop. You know, it's just part of our brain that controls that. And so what happens in a traumatic event and the parts of our brain that are guiding and controlling what we're doing are different than the parts of my brain that are guiding this conversation right now. And the other thing is the way that trauma gets stored in our minds, locations are also different than normal memories. So that's a quick snapshot, which obviously there's a lot of detail that goes into that, a lot of science behind it. And so we explain that to the soldiers on the front lines just to help them understand, like, this is what's going on in a traumatic event. And through all of that, there are some things that can happen then to help the memory get stored in a healthier place. So instead of in a place of actual, so when a soldier has a flashback, he really believes he's going through that event. And that's because that's where the event is stored in his brain. Well, we want to move that to a place called the hippocampus where it gets stored as a memory instead of as an actual event. And so we talk about all the science, we talk about what's going on in their minds, and then we help them see that there's some actually really easy things that they can do while they're on the front lines to help bring a fragmented experience back to a cohesive experience, which is how we normally go through pleasurable experiences. And part of that, one of the big things they can do is to just begin talking about it. It sounds so simple, but for them to discuss what they went through helps fragmented memories, fragmented senses to all get brought back together in a healthy place. And so but the challenge is amongst soldiers, they think something's wrong with them when they're struggling, when they can't sleep at night, when they're having nightmares. They think the other guys are doing fine. Something's wrong with me. I'm not strong enough. I'm not tough enough. I'm not cut out for this. And so they keep it to themselves. And one of the biggest dangers of trauma is shame. And shame leads us to isolation. And isolation then keeps any of this healing from really taking place. And so we're encouraging them to see what they're feeling and experiencing is actually a common response to an abnormal event. A friend of mine, Chris Adsett, that's how he describes it. So when a soldier feels like what they went through, they think something's wrong with them. And we're saying, no, you're having a common response. The thing that's wrong, the abnormal thing, is what you went through. Being in war is not a normal thing. The choices you had to make while you're out there are not normal choices. And so your fears, your concerns, what you're experiencing, those are common responses, the abnormal thing. And so even reframing what trauma is as to not something that's wrong with me, the thing that's wrong is out there, helps them all of a sudden just have a shift in the way they're looking at their experiences. And so we encourage them to discuss what they're talking about, to acknowledge the hardships, to receive care, and then to trust. We use the acronym DART: discuss, acknowledge, receive care, and then trust. And the trust piece is trust that healing is possible, trust your battle mates that you can talk about this, and it's always a springboard into, and trust Jesus, because God created the world good. We're living in the time of the fall, and someday he's coming back again. But in this time of living during a fallen world with evil in the world, trust that Jesus is still present. He's at work. He's redeeming. He's restoring. He's healing. And so, like, we're having those conversations, and Chaplain Alex is translating for us. And then we're saying, and this is the guy who's going to keep coming back here. Chaplain Alex, you can trust him. So that's kind of the 3-minute version of, you know, hour to 2-hour discussions we have in the basement of blown out apartment buildings a mile from the front line with Ukrainian soldiers.
Jeez, that's cool. Well, hey, I want to take a moment to hear from today's sponsor, Brian, but when we come back, I want to dig down into some of what we discussed as it relates to storytelling. Hey, ministry leaders. Today's episode is sponsored by Click Nonprofit. Are you looking to grow your ministry but don't have the money or marketing knowledge to make that happen? There's good news. Google offers an advertising grant to churches and ministries that is worth $10,000 per month. This means that if your ministry is a 501c3 nonprofit, you are eligible to receive $120,000 per year in free advertising dollars. This allows you to place ads at the top of Google search results page and drive thousands of visitors to your ministry website every month. Our sponsor, Click Nonprofit, helps your ministry acquire this Google ad grant and then manages your Google ads to ensure you get the most out of the grant. Schedule a free consultation at clicknonprofit.com to learn more about how this grant can help your specific ministry. Mention the Ministry Growth Show when you sign up and get 20% off your first 3 months of management. All right, welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. We've been talking with Brian Klager of Cadence International. Brian, as we entered into the ad break, we were talking about your guys' strategies around trauma-informed care and the work that you're doing with chaplains in that space. What role does storytelling play within trauma and the trauma-informed care that you guys are doing? How does that play out in what you guys are training and equipping your chaplains to see and understand and teach and use?
It's a great question. Storytelling is a powerful tool of ministry in any sphere. In the trauma-related sense, like I said earlier, shame is one of the biggest hindrances to trauma healing, and shame creates isolation. And when we're isolated, we're in our own little world. But what we're training soldiers, chaplains, to help them see is that when you talk about the events, when you tell the story, it's bringing fragmented experiences back together in a place where they can be healed better. But it's also at times helping you understand what you went through with a fuller picture. I mean, you have it maybe half colored. And when you tell the story of the events of what went on, it starts to fill in the other colored pieces, or maybe there's a gap in the story. And sometimes in a chaotic, traumatic event, you actually remember incorrectly what happened. And so a soldier, he may make the decision while in the trenches to send a couple of other soldiers around to flank. Maybe they get killed. And so now he's dealing with that. And in the retelling of the story, he can be talking about the fact that he made this decision. These guys got killed. And somebody may jump in and be like, "You didn't make that decision. That was a command that came down from the CO. Like, he told you to send those guys around there." He's like, "He did?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah." Like, it fills in gaps and it helps people to understand what really. So the sooner after an event that the story can be talked about and retold, the more opportunity for that healing to begin taking place. Now, the interesting thing on the front lines of Ukraine is day in, day out trauma. And so we recognize too that this mm-hmm. is just helping them survive on the front lines. This is because day in and day out, they are having traumatic experiences. But I mean, when we look through the Bible, is full of stories. Jesus used stories to teach, to train. Stories become connecting pieces. We were training some military and policemen down in Burundi, and we were actually just training them how to lead a small group Bible study. They just needed some of the basic skills. And so we're teaching them how to do this, you know, how to sit in circles versus rows, how to ask questions, and then allow the questions to springboard and create discussion amongst the group, like all kind of these fundamental things. And then, so we train them all these steps to do it. And then we say, okay, we're going to take 30 minutes. We're going to practice. Turn to chapter 7 in this book. We just want you to go through the sample Bible study. The person on the far left, you're in charge of the group. Ready, set, go. And so we kind of break them off and they're doing it. And one group starts laughing and they're drinking Coke and Fanta and they start clinking their bottles and cheering each other. And we're like, wow, what's going on back there? So it's interesting. We do the whole half hour. The chapter was on forgiveness. We just picked chapter 7. It happened to be on forgiveness. And when we came back together, we said, all right, let's kind of talk about how to go. How'd you feel? What went well? And this group back here, what was going on with you guys? Because you guys were all laughing. And they were talking about the story of forgiveness. And one of the guys said, during the Civil War, I was falsely arrested only because I was from the wrong ethnic group. And he told the story about how he got arrested and put in prison just because he was the wrong tribe. And as he told the story in detail, the guy, the policeman sitting across from him said, "I was the one who arrested you. I'm the one who put you in prison." And the other guy looks at him and says, "I forgive you." And they clinked bottles and they started laughing and like, but he told the story and the other guy was vulnerable and willing to say, you know, that was me. And then he says, "I forgive you." So, I mean, that's all coming through story. And now I'm retelling the story of what happened. You're smiling. Our listeners are hearing this and hopefully they're like, okay, God, you're good. You're up to things. Like, you're orchestrating forgiveness and reconciliation in ways where we thought we were just teaching a Bible study on chapter 7. I think that's the power of story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you and I talked about Kurt Thompson. He talks a lot about storytelling within small faith community. And when you hear me tell my story and I hear you tell your story, like there's a physical healing that takes place. You guys are seeing that within your trauma care on the front lines. Are you taking that and applying it within your disciple making work and allowing space for storytelling in small faith community, where I think for a long time the church small groups just look like knowledge transfer and Bible study, which is good and right, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think we miss out on an opportunity to build deeper relationship with one another and deeper relationship with how we relate to God when we are given space and opportunity to explore our own stories and relate to others as they explore their own stories within community, within small faith community. What does that look like for you guys within the disciple making that you're doing? Are you seeing some of that storytelling in that small faith community type setting have impact?
Yeah, we see it have tremendous impact. And I love the fact that you have like an extra little dose of energy and excitement around the idea of storytelling. It's part of who Cadence is and how we like to operate. In fact, Mike Patterson, he's on our pastoral care team. He was just out at one of our field conferences training our staff on storytelling. And It's not that they don't know how to do storytelling, but there is an art that you can learn. I mean, like Dan Allender, he's also a great resource on this. And so within our hospitality house communities, within our Cadence student ministry communities, because we're so focused on hospitality and relationship, it naturally coincides with the fact that we want to know people. We want to know their story. We want to lean into them. And so around the dinner table, to learn to ask good questions, to be curious. I have a friend, Paul Bradley, his whole theme in 2023 was curious. He's like, I'm just going to be curious. I want to be curious. And so he's curious about people. When you're curious about people, they tell their story. And when you're, and then this is the other piece. Part of, we're actually another piece of Cadence training that we're starting next week is a 6-week course that we're calling Care Through a Trauma-Informed Lens. Care Through a Trauma-Informed Lens. And so part of when you start to get people to tell their stories, you start to sense the parts where they don't want to talk. And depending on the setting, depending on building trust, all that's got to be there. But there are the right seasons where you actually lean into the hard thing. And I guess that's one of the things I've learned over the years of ministry is it's okay to ask the hard questions. It's okay to ask the questions that might make them feel uncomfortable, but is really starting down a road that takes them into a place of their life that they've been walled off, that they don't want to talk about, and to not be afraid of those conversations. Again, right setting, you know, not at the dinner table with all the kids around, all that. But in the past, early on in ministry, I used my humor as a way to deflect from those situations. I would sense the moment to start to get serious. And I really think God was starting to point us down a direction. And because I was afraid to go there because of my insecurities, because of who I was, I likened it to being in a swimming pool and I'm walking through the shallow end and I'm great with that. And as long as when you get to that spot where you start to feel it dip down into the deep end, right about then I create a joke. I circle us back to the shallow end and I keep things safe for me. And through all my experiences, through ministry, through the years, through learning about how to care for people, even in the midst of trauma in our lives, I've learned that it's okay to ask the questions. And I've actually had, in fact, our interpreter on this last trip in Ukraine, he spent a week with us. And towards the end of the trip, he said something to the effect of, how do you feel okay to ask the questions you're asking of them right now? He goes, you don't know them that well, and yet you're asking them really hard things. You're asking them how they felt when they just got the news that they had lost another soldier. You're asking them how they felt when this event took place and they were in the dark trench all night, not knowing if they're going to make it. And I just said, you know, I think it's the courage to trust God, that God will do something with it. it's a level of respect. It's being vulnerable and honest, and then trusting what God would do with it.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that there, as I've looked at the hesitancy of the church to enter into storytelling and to use it in whatever application, one of the things that I think is a major barrier to it being used on the surface level, just marketing and communications, but on the deeper level, what you guys are, you and me are talking about right now, there is a level of vulnerability that's required that it requires practice. It requires us to be in the practice of becoming a storytelling people. And if we, like just with anything else, without practice, we're not going to get good at something. Without practice, I'm not going to get good at being vulnerable about my story with those that I'm talking with and building relationship with. To get past those vulnerabilities and the shame that's so wrapped up in so many of our stories, it requires practice, I think. And so it seems like you guys are giving space and opportunity for people to be in the practice of sharing their story. What are some of the things that you're doing to set up in those small faith community settings that give space and opportunity? Like you just touched on one of them, you're asking and are willing to ask the hard questions. But are there anything else that you're doing that other ministry leaders could take away from and apply into their disciple making context or in their ministry context, whatever that looks like? Because I think we can all learn a lot, especially from you guys who are on the front lines experiencing trauma and dealing with trauma so consistently and regularly. Like, this is clearly something that you're dealing with on an ongoing basis. So you're learning a lot faster than everybody else.
I appreciate the way you said that at the end. We're learning a lot faster than everybody else. That's true, because as you were talking, I was thinking, yeah, that's true, but it's not just frontline stuff. It's in a hospitality house setting where mm-hmm. the soldiers aren't deployed, and so many of us have trauma from our past, from our growing up, from our experiences. And one of the things about trauma is it changes us, and we're different people because of the trauma. And so I think one of the challenges in the American church, so I've lived overseas for 16 years, and in a couple different settings, all 16 years were in Germany, and they were in small communities and small pockets of Americans. So it wasn't so English speakers, but in these small communities, there was a richness and a depth to the community groups, both in the military setting and then in a small missionary town. And I think because we all had, we had less options, we had similar timelines, similar schedules. We had one church that we could attend, and, you know, like everybody goes to the same school. So everything is drawing together, and it helps foster community. And so in that setting, we could have, you build trust over time. You're building mm-hmm. relationships. You're getting to know things about people. You're experiencing them in different settings. We come back to America. I live, you know, in the suburbs of Denver, and, you know, the amount of different churches and different ministries, instead of all coming together, everything's always going different directions. And so there's an innate challenge. And so what I think we need to do is we need to be very intentional about hospitality. We need to be very intentional about commitment. And so if you're in a small group in your church, like, that's one of the highest commitments that we need to be honoring in our lives. And so when an event A all of a sudden comes up, but that's the night of small group night, sorry, I can't do event A. And I think that's just one of the challenges in American culture. I've only been back in the States now for 2.5 years. And as I look around, I'm like, man, this is so much harder. It's harder for me. I'm not saying like it was so much easier in these small communities where it just naturally drew everybody together and we were bonding and caring for one another. And so we have to be intentional about how we foster relationships, long-term commitment to relationships, going deeper with fewer. And that's always harder than showing up and being friendly with lots. And so those are the things that I think over time really we've developed so we've got five families that we're in a small group with that it took a little time to figure out who it was and connect, and we're committed to each other. We go to the same church, our kids go to the same school. So we got that overlap. We see each other multiple times throughout the week, but we're committed to one another and we're committed to praying for one another. And even when I went to Ukraine this last time, I actually put together a team of 12 guys that were my prayer team. And I would send them text messages with details that I didn't want to tell my wife about till I got home because it was unsafe. But I needed 12 guys. And part of those 12 guys was absolutely going to be the five guys from my small group, because that's part of life. They're going to experience what I was going through. So I don't know if that answers your question a little bit.
No, yeah, that's good. That's good. And then back to the learning quicker than the rest of us. Can you talk a little bit more on what that looks like, especially within your conflict zones where the trauma is real and every day? What are you guys seeing, and what are maybe some of the changes that you're making, the challenges that you're running into with regards to story? Are you seeing the same, like, it sounds like you're seeing a lot of the same issues. I don't want to share my story because of the shame that's wrapped up in it. That's happening. It sounds like whether it's on the front lines of a conflict zone or it's out here in the West where we don't have that experience and comfort gets in the way of me having a deep, intimate relationship with people within my community. So, I'm just really interested in learning, like, what are some key takeaways that you guys are experiencing where you're having to learn this a lot quicker than the rest of us?
I think part of it comes down to, so Paul, who was in Ukraine with me and is part of Cadence, also Paul Bradley, you know, he was in the Navy for a while. And then he's also part of a ministry called Free Burma Rangers. And so his experiences in Burma, his experiences in Iraq and Syria over the last couple of years, those are a bridge, and they immediately build a level of trust. I was in the U.S. Army. I was deployed to Kosovo and Macedonia. I was in Iraq in 2003 and 2004. And so when we start talking with soldiers, that's a quick building. And we use those experiences to establish trust with the guys really quick. And once we establish that trust, then we have a common language, even though we don't speak the same language. And we understand and relate to what they're going through. And once we show them that we understand, now we can also be asking them next level questions. And we have the courage, I think, to ask some of those next questions because we know what it's going to do for their heart, their spirit, their soul, and their mind and their emotions. We know what it's going to do to be talking about that. So that gives us the courage to actually ask the questions and to say, how did that make you feel? We were out to dinner with Max. I'll pause my story here real quick too. The other thing I will say is the fact that we are repeatedly going to the places we go to. Mm-hmm. When they see you come back again and again and again, and especially when it's in a conflict zone or in one of the poorest places in the world, that speaks volumes to them. And so this last trip, so it was probably about 10 days ago, we were out to dinner in Eastern Ukraine with a military officer. His name's Max. Before the war, he was just a youth pastor helping run a rehab center in Kyiv, but now he's basically a National Guard soldier. He's been on the front lines. His stories are horrible, what he's going through. And we're out to dinner and he gets a call. He steps out, he takes the call, he comes back and he goes, "We just lost another soldier." And so now it's at dinner. And so Paul just asks him a question about how do you feel in experiencing that again? And we don't avoid it. We lean into it. We get him to talk about it. We talked about it for a little bit. It didn't end up precluding or covering over the whole meal. You know, eventually we shifted back to lighter topics and had fun and laughed together. But in the midst of that, to ignore that or to not ask him next level questions and to be curious, but yeah. we're curious because we know it's going to help. We know it brings healing. And ultimately, we want to be a part of that for them.
Hmm. That's good. Well, let's take a last break for our last sponsor break. But when we come back, I want to finish up our conversation with Brian Klager and of Cadence International. Hey, church leaders. Today's episode is sponsored by Kingdom Stories. When it comes to your digital marketing and content strategies, have you ever wondered how you can use the power of storytelling and testimony? Imagine the impact. Stories and testimonies that resonate, that move hearts and minds. Testimonies that prepare people to receive gospel truths. Here's the problem. You're busy doing ministry and you don't have time to worry about your content strategies. And you definitely don't have time to worry about one more program. You already have too much on your plate. And the consequences? You're not taking full advantage of digital. The content you do post gets ignored. You have no plan or strategy for your digital engagement. And ultimately, God doesn't get the glory he deserves because we're not testifying of his transformational and redemptive work. What would it look like if your people knew how to share their testimony? Your monthly content strategies were filled with stories instead of self-promotional content, and your content was focused on your people and God's work in their lives. What if your content was actually engaging because it was story-driven? Kingdom Stories is more than a service. It's a catalyst for transformative digital communication. Stories change lives. Stories are engaging. And everyone has a story. What has happened in my life can happen in your life too. Here's the best part. You don't have to do the heavy lifting. Kingdom Stories will handle everything from start to finish. If you want to learn more or get our free content strategy map that will outline the entire process, go to kingdomstories.us. We know how overwhelming and frustrating content strategies and digital marketing can be. So we've solved that problem for you. Stop creating aimless content. Let us help you tell the stories coming out of your ministry. Let stories and testimonies fuel your church's digital outreach. Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. We've been talking with Brian Klager of Cadence International. Brian, to shift the conversation a little bit, can you talk about partnership and the role of partnership within your ministry, and what does it look like to partner with other parachurch organizations or other churches as you guys do your work all over the world?
It's great. The questions you keep asking like hit on the, maybe you just did a ton of research on Cadence, or maybe God's totally involved in this, or maybe all the above. But the reality is, like, partnerships is a huge part of who we are and how we work. And in terms of being parachurch and coming alongside the church, we partner in most settings with military chapels. And so our ministries are outside U.S. military bases, most of them. And so we'll come alongside the chapel and the chaplains. We are intentional to say, we're here to support you. This isn't a turf battle or anything like that. My wife and I, anytime like new chaplain would come into the community, we'd have them out to our house for dinner. Hey, this is who we are. This is what we do. And then we'd say, and we look so forward to working under you. And we'd intentionally use the word, we look forward to working under you. We look forward to working for you. We didn't have to do that, but we just wanted them to know we are so in partnership with them. We're going to work for them. And we will make compromises to support the work that they're doing. And we want to be an extension of your ministry. And so Cadence is partnering with chaplains. It's a heartbeat of who we are, what we do, both in our student ministries, our adult ministries, our kids ministries. And so we're doing that. But then there's also amongst military ministries, which there's quite a few of them out there, NAV military, crew military. Oh, and before I forget too, there's another, when you were talking about storytelling and small group and trauma healing, Reboot Recovery. I just love that ministry and what they're doing. If people are interested, look up Reboot Recovery online, and they've got a great international piece. But anyways, back to the partnerships and military settings and military ministries is parachurch, chaplains, and local church. Because there are some English-speaking local churches overseas outside U.S. military bases, and then obviously here in the States. And so this triangle, we are real intentional about how are we partnering together with the chaplains and with churches in those local communities. So that's one of our focuses. The other cool thing is there's a ministry out there called Military Ministry Network. I think it's mmn.com or .org. And their whole focus is helping bring together military ministries for partnership, for collaboration, for cooperation. And so about a month ago, every year they do an annual conference called the Fellowship of Christian Military Ministries, get together for 2.5 days just with all these different ministries, talk about what you're doing, where you're doing it, how you're doing it, partner with one another, collaborate with one another. And so the partnership amongst military ministries, it's a healthy environment in which we get to operate.
That's really cool. So it's kind of like Illumination Bible, or I think every campus is YWAM and Crew, and all the campus ministries came together to say, how can we stop stepping on each other's toes and trying to reach the same campuses and get every campus exactly reached by some certain date. I can't remember what they set, but like a true partnership agreement between similar like-minded ministries, so that you're not doing the same things in the same areas and asking for the same money from the same donors to do the same stuff. That's cool. There's only those two other examples that I've seen work pretty effectively in partnership. It's a popular topic, right? Like rooting for rivals made the ministry space kind of awaken to the idea of partnership and the role of it and the importance of it. But outside of those two examples, I've never heard any real big success stories. So it's good to hear that there's a third option Absolutely. Out there for what partnership can look like amongst ministries. Yeah. How, when you go into a new area, and maybe you're not branching out and going, you're kind of just, are you guys constantly going into new areas? Or is it kind of focused on, is your work currently focused on where you're at right now?
That question is totally based on, oh, Jesus' words, the harvest is plentiful, the workers are few. We are regularly mm-hmm. being asked to come to different locations, whether it's military installations where chaplains are saying, hey, so this is the other cool thing about the military. You know, military members, they rotate every 2 to 3 years. And so we like to talk about the military being one of the best gospel sending ministries that's out there. Every 2 to 3 years, they're sending these guys to a new ministry field. And so we're like, well, we get them for 3 years. Let's make sure we're discipling them. So when they go to the next place, they're able to be sharing the gospel in their lives with the military community, wherever they're at, and just using Cadence as a model, whether Cadence is there or not. But we have chaplains who will get to a new base and they'll be like, hey, do you have anybody you could send to this base? We have military families who are asking that. And then even cross-culturally, I mean, we have more opportunities to go work and do training cross-culturally than we even have the people to go do it. Right now we've been invited to go down and train chaplains in Belize. And so, you know, like that's the next one we're praying about, is that somewhere, God, you would want us to go. And if we had more people, if we had more missionaries, and I would just say, if you're like in seminary out there, if you're looking for a second career in life, we got a lot of people who do a full career in the business world, and then their second career, they come run a hospitality house and they just get to love on kids, mm-hmm. you know, like their kids are growing and out of the house and they come run a Cadence ministry. And so this is the shameless recruiting plug. Like, you're listening to this, you get excited about what I'm saying. Well, then Cadence is for you. The harvest is plentiful. We need more workers. We'd love for you to come open a new location, or, you know, fill in at one of our, because sometimes our people are moving around too. And so one family moves to a new location, we have someone to backfill them and keep that ministry going in that location.
That's good. Well, Brian, this has been a really fun conversation. If people want to get a hold of you and learn more about what you guys are doing, if someone hears that shameless plug and they want to get involved, how do they do so?
The easiest thing to remember is cadence.org, like a marching cadence, cadence.org. And if you want to get a hold of me, then just do / Kleger, Kleager, like a beggar, but a Kleger. And my phone number, email is all on there. You can just give me a call. I don't mind. That'd be great.
Perfect. Can I pray for you as we wrap up?
Zach, that'd be awesome. I appreciate the time and letting us be able to share what God's doing around the world. And it's a delight just to get to be a part of it. When you're talking about storytelling, you know, I feel my energy rise when I talk about what God's doing in military communities with people. So yes, pray, thank God for what he's been doing, and pray that he keeps doing it.
Awesome. Father, thank you so much for this conversation with Brian and the blessing that it was to me. I pray that it would be a blessing to you and other ministry leaders, just to see the insights in how this organization runs and how they're thinking about story and the implications and applications for it. Father, I know that that piece of the conversation was really exciting for me. I just lift up this amazing ministry. I pray for Brian and his team and the rest of the leadership team, that you would continue to guide and lead and provide wisdom and clarity on running the organization well and going where you have them go next. And I just pray that they would continue to follow you, that you would continue to do an amazing work through this ministry. There's so many opportunities within the areas and places that the military reaches across the globe. There's opportunity for disciple making everywhere. And so we just see that and recognize that and pray that you would move. Lord, we love you and thank you that we get to be part of this redemptive work and partnered in you with you in it, Lord. We love you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Brian, thanks so much for being on the
show. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ministry Growth Show. If you've enjoyed it, we'd appreciate it if you rate and review us on your favorite podcasting app, and make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you have a story or expertise to share with other ministry directors and pastors, or know someone who would be a great guest for the show, let us know. We love connecting with ministry executives and sharing their wisdom and insight with our audience. Just send us an email at podcast@reliantcreative.org. And lastly, if you need help telling your ministry's story, we would love to share how we can help in that process. Check out Reliant Creative at reliantcreative.org and book a call today. See you next time.